Hi, and welcome to Talking Politics on KBIA. I'm Kate Grumke. This month marks the 20th anniversary of the Rwandan genocide. On April 7, 1994, an extremist group led the country's ethnic majority, called Hutus, in an attack on the ethnic minority, the Tutsis. Over the next 100 days, as many as 1 million men, women, and children were killed, according to the United Nations. Nadege Uwase is the executive assistant to the Chancellor's Diversity Initiative at MU and is from Rwanda. She sat down with KBIA's Hope Kerwin to talk about what it was like growing up in Rwanda during the genocide and what the international community has learned from the tragedy.
Hello, everyone. My name is Nadege Uwase. I was born and raised in Rwanda, but I think now that I've lived in Missouri for such a long time, it's just my second home. So I tend to say I'm from Colombia now.
And I guess, what do you remember like most from your time living in Rwanda? What really sticks out to you?
Well, my favorite thing to eat when I'm back home are fruits. So I remember growing up in my backyard, we had fruit trees. We also had avocados, but we had papayas, we had mangoes. I think we had guavas, we had passion fruits. So I just remember my childhood being sort of like playing in the backyard, climbing trees, kind of like the summers in America, I guess, is probably the best way to describe them.
So I know that the distinction between Hutu people and the Tutsi people was actually like created by the Belgians during the colonial period after World War I. When do you like first remember becoming aware of that distinction?
Probably not until early 90s. I would say about between 90 and 91. I remember one particular experience when the RPF was coming into Kigali, and the day that they were entering Kigali, sort of like the path that we're on, so just lots and lots of cars. I don't know what age I was, but I just remember being with either my family or some friends, and we were just kind of like staring at them. So that was probably the first time it registered that this is what Tutsis looked like. And that was really important too, because as a child, there were newspapers that depicted Tutsis as people with tails or as cockroaches. So I had assumed that when I went to see them, for one, they wouldn't be humans. And then when I did, it was just kind of like, why is everybody making a big fuss? They kind of look like me.
And so now, 20 years later, do you think these differences still register with people?
Not necessarily. I think they're ingrained in some ways. So people who are very knowledgeable about their history, so if you know your parents and grandparents and your family members, and you knew what ethnicity they were pre-94, and although we don't talk about ethnicity now, then you know that information. Yes, there's still discrimination in those sense, but it's not as visible.
So you said that you don't really talk about ethnic groups anymore.
No, we're not allowed to. Basically, it's just a way of saying all Rwandans are Rwandans and let's not be divisive. So it's not really part of everyday conversation the way it used to be.
Recently, the conflicts in the Central African Republic have been compared to the events that took place in Rwanda. But unlike 1994, the United Nations has actually taken action about these conflicts. What do you think, if anything, has the international community, I guess, learned from the conflicts in Rwanda?
Oh, that's such a tough question. I think it's just the opportunities that have been given to people who care more about the world and about these issues that they're finally on the table. So I think more and more opportunities for people who are well-informed and well-educated to advocate for us, you know, and the us is sort of being really anybody who's out there in the gutters and really needing help. It's a little different. I think we've grown leaps and bounds because there's movements all over the world about people really asking for their rights. Maybe I'm a little older, and maybe I know things that I didn't know, and in that sense, I'm a little biased as well. But I think we just have more people. We really do. It's sort of the forefront in ways it probably wasn't when I was growing up.
Thank you so much, Nadesh, for coming and speaking with us today.
You're so welcome. Thanks for having me.
That was KBIA's Hope Kerwin talking with Nadej Uwase about growing up in Rwanda and that country's progress since 1994. A bill proposed in the State House to begin discussion on the Missouri state flag's design has some historians worried. One flag expert, though, says the state's a long way from a redesign process. Jack Howard reports.
In 2001, the Missouri flag was ranked in the bottom half of states for design. The study was done by an organization devoted to flag study, the North American Vexillological Association, NAVA. One reason, says NAVA member Ted Kay, is the seal in the middle of it.
Seals are meant to go on a piece of paper, seen from up close, not moving, and from one side.
Kay says the purpose of a flag is to clearly distinguish one place from another, often from afar. But the director of an exhibit on Marie Oliver, the designer of the Missouri flag, says it is more than a highway sign. Cape River Heritage Museum volunteer Bonnie Stepanoff says if you can't see the flag's designs, just get a little closer to it.
A flag has behind it sentiment and attachment, and it goes beyond just being useful.
Stepanoff says the flag educates younger visitors about Missouri's history. Meanwhile, Kay says a flag should be so simple that a child can draw it from memory. And when they get a little older, think it's cool enough to get a tattoo of it.
I see tattoos as a great marker of how people embrace a symbol. In my city of Portland, Oregon, the city flag has been simplified, and people are now getting tattoos of the Portland city flag.
But Missouri flag tattoos don't concern historians yet. Kay says flag redesigns are spurred by external events that cause widespread support, instead of vexillologists or flag studiers like him. Jack Howard, KBIA News.
That's it for Talking Politics this week. I'm Kate Grumke. Thanks for listening.